Thanks for downloading this podcast, which is for personal use only. All contents are copyright Radio Show Limited and must not be reproduced, rebroadcast, or used in any form without permission. For contact details, go to www.radiolemon.com. Midweek Motorsport, your weekly window on the world of racing. Formula One, sports cars, American racing, world rally, touring cars, karting, off-road and bikes. If it has wheels and they keep score, it's on Midweek Motorsport, every Wednesday evening from 8 p.m.
Along to Midweek Motorsport. This is episode 6 of series 8. It's the 13th of February. I'm John Hindorf. No Tim Gray tonight as he is somewhat unwell. We wish him the best. He's still in the control centre, but if we lose him, then we'll have to send him some paracetamol. He hasn't told us what's wrong with him. Hopefully it's not anything too serious, but we wish him our best. Nick Damon, our Formula One correspondent, is off to my right.
Am I? I'm a bit, that's better. Yes, I am to your right. Sorry, I was thinking of some of the conversations we had. I couldn't possibly be the right of you in many ways.
No, but there is that.
I am to your right as far as the studio is concerned. How are you, John? How's the jet lag?
Geographic. You don't have jet lag. It's fine, thank you. Mm-hmm. And how are you this evening?
I don't have jet lag either.
And on a packed programme tonight, we have what?
All the usual features.
Well done.
Is that the first time I've got it right?
I think it might be. Oh, excellent. That seems to have worked. Now all I've got to do is make sure that this is plugged through.
You have news in English and not Spanish now, I wouldn't think.
Well, no, I'll find some news in Spanish, I'm sure that they can't, okay. You know, how difficult can it be, really?
Well, yeah, it has to be motor racing news in Spanish, not just the front page of La Mafia. Talking about...
It'll be something.
...interest rates or whatever.
And we will have various vocal interruptions. This evening from special guests. It would help if I managed to switch that through the desk. But we'll start with... apparently you were too loud there, mate. Apparently.
Really?
Yes.
That's just a bonus for the listeners. Can I start with a request?
You can.
Midweek Motorsport Listeners Collective, I have a problem. I need to know what you can do in Plymouth on your own...
Very good.
...as a lady at the weekend. Now, it's a long story, but suffice to say, Rachel and I are going down to Plymouth. I'm going to be...
Fiancé
Rachel. I should be wearing a very heavily zipped-up anorak for the whole weekend and staying in the sports hall racing toy cars. And my marvellous wife-to-be has decided to come and accompany me, despite me on many occasions warning her it might not be the most interesting use of a weekend. So, what can you do on your own in Plymouth that's fun?
Okay. I'll give you that.
This weekend.
Where did the week go? It is Midweek Motorsports Listeners Collective. And we can lose the opening jingle. Thank you very much, Tim, if you don't mind. And what I will try and do then is play this. Ah, that didn't work, did it? It's coming out somewhere.
TV.
Every week we bring you all the motorsport news.
Midweek Motorsport.
Midweek Motorsport. At RadioLeMans.com.
And let's start with Formula. Start with Formula One. As
good.
Nick is here, and
it's a busy second half of the week when we last spoke.
Right.
Because
Tyres is the first story, mate. Super softs.
Yes, they are super. Well, of course, the thing is that tyres are, while supplied by Pirelli, with their variation from chewing to bubble, of course, and lasting as well, they have, of course, changed them this year. And not just for the colours, because, of course, they have slightly different colours on them, but they have changed the construction of the tyre, which obviously is quite important, because that affects everything from the aerodynamics to the way the suspension works to... rehab the car handles. The teams all got a chance to try them once at the last Grand Prix on the Friday in Brazil. And of course, they've been using them extensively last week at the first test in Jerez. Though Pirelli then turned around and said, well, Jerez is absolutely useless to test tyres at because it's unlike any circuit we go to. It's far more abrasive and not much point. So what they then decided to do, they've decided now, is to announce to us the excitement that is the opening compounds for the first race of the year.
Yeah.
Can there be anything more exciting than that? So, in Australia, as you kind of previewed, almost ruining my thunder, John,
right,
they're starting with super soft and medium. I'm not quite sure what that means, in that the super soft normally actually are only used in places like in street circuits, and of course, Albert Park is a hybrid street circuit and track, was being running through the park in Melbourne. So it seems like a medium for Australia. Then Malaysia, which of course they're saying it's medium and hard, but obviously what only matters in Malaysia is what rain tyres they're going to use. China is soft and medium, and Bahrain is soft and hard. Now the interesting thing is that they've got two races there with a single gap and two races with a double gap.
I thought they were meant to be changing those gaps. That was the whole point.
Yeah, the interesting thing was that they changed. They worked very heavily on the all the construction is different. They worked very heavily on the hard tyre, so much so that the hard tyre in Jerez was faster than the medium. So they've done some work on those. So basically, there's a double gap in Australia and Bahrain, and a single gap in Malaysia and China, but They'll issue these PR releases quite regularly telling us what tyres they're going to get. It really doesn't mean anything until you get to the track, because it could give you, you know, half a second difference, it could give you a second difference, it could give you virtually no difference at all. Then you have to wonder about the longevity of the thing. So until we get there, we won't know. But normally the super softs are, you know, quite delicate, so it does look like in Australia they are running an interesting policy with the super soft and medium, but the rest of the tracks, you know, it's going to depend. The other thing, of course, is it depends on the, you know, on what the ambient temperature is. You know, this is the point where they're testing now, and even in Spain it's hardly hot, it's just much more pleasant than the UK. You know, you go to Australia, you go there, and it could be 40 degrees, it could be 20 degrees. You go to Malaysia, well, rain, it's only about 35 degrees. In China, again, depending on how much smog there is, it'll be, you know, it affects the temperature. In Bahrain, it'll be blisteringly hot. So it is actually quite a difficult opening run for the cars, because they go from where they've been tested. But yes, Pirelli have got new tyres. And don't forget, star of the whole show, the hard tyre now has an orange sidewall. Because that silver sidewall was too similar to the white sidewall, apparently. So it's an orange.
Yeah, but they never used the orange and the white at the same time, so what difference did it make?
Well, that's a very good point, but they obviously decided that people were mistaking the super soft tyre for the hard when they were never used together. But now we have white, yellow, red and orange, and of course the intermediates are green, and the full wet is blue. So it's very, very exciting, and Pirelli have managed to get themselves a bit more publicity. Well, the other thing about Pirelli is, of course, they're whinging at the moment, John.
Why?
Because they haven't got the official contract for next year yet.
Oh, really?
So this is the last of their 3 years, and they want to have an official contract for 2014 to move forward. Now, originally, what they said, if you remember all those years back, is that they were happy to have a monopoly for these years and then go to competition in 2014.
Right.
But they've kind of changed their mind about that now. That's too much like hard work. And they just want to be given the contract. And in fairness, it almost certainly happened. But it's an interesting contract. You kind of wonder, you know, how much, you know, Pirelli cost them a lot of money to provide the tyres, but you don't know whether they pay for the licence or not, whether they can get paid for the licence by people. And obviously,
they sell tyres to the teams, yes?
No, they're supplied free of charge.
No way. So what? So they pay Bernie for the...
That don't know that, you see.
Not, no, they will do. They'll pay Bernie for the rights to pay in.
Yeah.
Right? And so how do they recoup their...
Advertising. It's a PR gig.
No.
Yeah.
Somebody's got to be buying tyres.
Not that I know. I mean, there may be nominal payments made, but they would be all rolled up into other things. But no, I mean, as far as I know, no one pays for tyres. They get a set amount given to them.
No way. Okay.
You get 6 sets of hard compound, 5 sets of softer compound. You also get 4 sets of intermediate, 3 sets of wet tyres to all races.
I just can't believe that is the case. But if you tell me that is the case, then I'll believe you. I think that's remarkable.
It's good PR, isn't it?
Well, we talked about this the other week about whether PR ultimately is enough to be able to justify everything that you're spending. And Pirelli, I grant you, is a big company, but for goodness sake.
Let's be honest about this. We talk about them a lot more, and General TV talks about them a lot more, and people say Pirelli a lot, and it's all down to, I'm not an advertising or marketing executive, but apparently the key thing, exactly, yeah, for very good reasons as well, the key thing is for people to say your name, and there's no such thing as bad publicity. And if you keep saying Pirelli,
that's not off, true either.
Well, you see, this is the thing. If you think about it, if they're looking just to sell road tyres, it's interesting, because if you try to imagine yourself as an ordinary Joe motorist, not interested in motorsport, yeah,
right.
And you rock up to get new tyres for your Ford Mondeo. And they say, we've got budget tyres, we've got mid-price tyres, and we've got branded tyres. And you say, I'd like branded tyres, please. What have you got?
No, but most people, 9 out of 10 people say, put me on when I've already got on.
No, I don't. Well, possibly anyway, but if it's, in my scenario, it's different. And they go, right, what have you got? I've got Continentals or Michelins or Pirellis. Oh, Pirelli, you're in F1. I'll have Pirellis, please.
Only if you watch F1.
No, but the point about it is that they get, a combined viewership of, 6 million for each of the races in the UK and all the other races around, in Europe and the world, millions of people watching it. That's not the same 6 million people each time. The number of people who actually watch a Grand Prix race during the season is probably, 10 million, I would think? People actually will watch a race at some point. They say Pirelli enough for everyone to hear that, so that's how it works. That's the point about it. It's not designed to impress us. It's designed to impress Joe Public.
I still maintain that most people...
Oh, I'm pretty certain. I'm sure if you did the maths, it might come another story about doing the maths. It might not work. I don't know. But it's an interesting thing. But, I think there's another... I'm not convinced. Yeah, but it's all about doing the maths. And how do you count the numbers? And do you count normally? Do you count like, an accountant? Or do you count like Silverstone? There's different ways of counting.
Joe says, at Specutainment, after reading wiki page on Plymouth, best bet for fun is not to go to Plymouth. Michael McLaren says, Nick, whilst in Plymouth, you could either dress up like a pilgrim or send Sir Francis Drake about to set off to fight the Armada.
Yeah.
Is that the Nissan Armada?
It could be, yeah. My bowls isn't good enough.
You what, sorry?
My bowls.
Okay. Kevin Ernst says, I missed the times when F1, the best driver, won the race, not the tyre tactics. Seems reasonable. Mm-hmm. And great story about the Radio Le Mans clock on there this evening. And at one stage, we were going to get replicas of that made for wristwatches. I don't know what happened to that.
Well, there's going to be a ceremony underneath the clock involving a wristwatch in June.
Ah, yes, you're right. There is. Let's crack on with Graham Goodwin, editor of DailySportsGuard.com, and catch up on a few bits and pieces since we last spoke. We did have the Sebring Wheels Down Winter Test whilst we were in Australia, which had 14 cars. Nothing desperately exciting to report from that, Graham. No surprises. Pretty much the people who we expected to turn up did turn up. We should say that 14 isn't the amount of cars for the American Le Mans series. It's not mandatory. There were no big surprises, no big unveils there.
Yet, John. Yet.
But there will be a big unveil on the 14th, won't there?
Which one are you talking about on the 14th, sorry?
Is when we're going to get the new name of the series, apparently has been, one of our listeners has suggested it, and it's been taken up, and also the new names of the classes.
I think you can expect another reveal, and I'm not going to tell you what it is yet, but I can tell you that there is another big surprise to come, I believe. Certainly.
Does it involve an entry? Because my goodness me, they need some.
Does involve an entry. I'm going to be very careful on what I say at the moment. It rather depended on the result of a couple of phone calls in the last 24 hours for it to actually happen. All I will say is there is the distinct potential right here, right now, of LMP2 cars in multiple in the American Le Mans series next year. This year, rather.
Okay. And that's come from nowhere then, hasn't it?
Not quite. I mean, I think you could probably predict where some of those might be coming from. But the other part of the equation is potentially, and I'll say that carefully because I don't know the results of the conversations that I know have been going on, potentially a big surprise.
And is that due to differences in the teams involved or differences in the attitude of the series towards Prototype 2 cars?
I think it's to do with the fact that clearly there's an impetus behind getting P2 out there. They clearly have got interest in making sure that we've got a mix of cars going into 2014. That's certainly part of it. One part of the equation made it abundantly clear they wouldn't enter without competition, didn't they? Yes. Now, and if that competition is coming, they may well have changed their mind. But the potential, I think, is you might see one class taking a minor hit, another class actually taking a big leap forward.
Conquest have just said they're going to concentrate on sports car racing in GTC in the American Le Mans Series
and or LMPC,
having sold their IndyCar chassis finally. And we'll be talking about IndyCar later on with Declan when he has his ear on the oval, providing his ear has been dug out of the 2'6" of snow that he's got at the moment. Okay, well, I'm intrigued by that. Thank you. By next week's show, do we think?
I hope so. I'm going to be making a couple of calls, and you know, I don't like making people's announcements for them, and I don't think they knew that I know, but they probably do now because there's probably people rushing to the phone at the other end, at the other side of the Atlantic just now. My guess as well is that there's a colleague from the press room hoping against hope that I don't say the words he's hoping not to hear from the radio, because he'll want out as an exclusive. Got news from there. But we'll see what's what. My guess is we'll hear in days, not weeks.
Fantastic tweet at Spectatainment from Rob Janer, who's at Rob Race Marshals. If the gents with the money were hiring the graduates, would it be so much of a problem in British GT? I suspect not, Rob. That's a very good point.
But the point being is, if the gents were hiring the graduates, then they'd be the pro. So that wouldn't solve the problem. You know, it is one of those things. You know what? There's a million and one different answers to the same question. What I'll say right here, right now is, we ask for openness, don't we, from the people who organise motorsport. I asked the question, and now with Benji, he went through it line by line with me, and you can't quibble with that. They're standing up and are justifying their choices, and they're happy to do it publicly.
Mark Housen's just pointed out that it is at the discretion of the organisers to regrade people throughout a season. So I suppose you could say that they're just doing that before the season starts. We might have a poll on if Tim's listening back at HQ, feeling a bit under the weather this evening, let's have a poll about British GT. Is it right that the graduates are, simple yes or no, is it right that the graduates are excluded because they are quote unquote too fast? That is what's been said. We'll get that poll up in just a moment or two's time. Graham Goodwin from dailysportscar.com is with us. Don't giggle about what people can't see. Okay, I know that you're looking at various other things. There was a bit of a surprise in that Ryan DL joined the SRT Viper team for the three Enduros. That obviously will interlock Graham with his Starworks drives in other championships.
Yeah, good news for the SRT team. Ryan is an excellent driver, and it's, you know, has got some profile, you know, beyond that team as well, which will help them. In fact, it's been all good news all round, hasn't it, really, for the GT class and the ALMS over the last week, with confirmation and the appearance of the car for Rizzi, the wheels down test as well. And I think the other thing you're going to talk about right now is the new car unveiled yesterday.
The new car unveiled yesterday at Daytona was the BMW Z4, which is unashamedly, from Jens Marquardt and the rest of the BMW Motorsport guys from Germany, a GT3 car. It's not a GTE car at all. It's a GT3 car that they are adapting to GTE regs. So in terms of legality, it isn't in a lot of ways, and has had to be given some waivers, including for the engine, the bodywork, the underbody aerodynamics, the track, the wheelbase. Nick's got his hand up here. Hang on a second, Nick.
What's left?
Not much.
Engine, chassis, bodywork, track, everything. So
Are
the badges okay?
The badges are fine.
Thank God for that.
And the paintwork, I'm told, is lovely.
Really, it's
No, the badges are a sticker to save weight. That's not on the
It isn't. It hasn't got its full ACO. It hasn't got its full ACO homologation yet, even with the 3/4 inch thick amount of paperwork that's given it its waivers. Now, I don't blame BMW for this at all. They needed a new car. They told us they were going to rationalise everything onto the Z4 chassis. But quite clearly, Graham, this is not a GTE car, and in no way, shape or form does it comply with any of the very technical GTE regulations. And it seems to me that we are going down a route at the moment that effectively renders the GTE regulations pointless.
Yeah, I think you probably I agree with you there, John. I mean, we've had the massive waiver for the Viper already, and then it's got an engine the size of a house in it. but it does seem, doesn't it, that we've got rather more waivers than answers. And it's, at least with balance of performance, and I can barely believe I'm saying this, is there some clarity from race to race about what the changes are that have been made. It tends to be kind of smoke and mirrors with the waivers in GTE. They're not published.
Which is disgraceful, let's be honest.
Well, it's ridiculous. But it's almost like it's preempting the discussions that are happening at the moment about the kind of bringing together those classes, isn't it? I mean, I feel at the moment we're standing at the kind of side of a very wide river with sports car racing. You've got obviously the future in North America being determined. We've got the new LMP1 cars coming along next year in WEC. You've got the current discussions about the future GT regulations. It could all go terribly right, or it could all go terribly wrong. And as far as GT is concerned at the moment, we just need, I think, a little bit of calm and a little bit of common sense, because at the moment, some good things are happening in GT racing. We had the Aston Martin launch last week with some hefty updates to that car. We've got the new GTE Porsche for the WEC and beyond this year as well. We've got revisions to the Ferrari 458. It almost seems to me that we're, in global terms at least, we're handing over the reins on the altar of variety. And I'm a lover of variety in GT racing. Mm-hmm. I think it's an absolutely wonderful thing, but not to the point where you back yourself into such a technical corner that basically becomes a run what you brung.
Yeah.
That's what you want. Let's say what it is.
No.
It's a run what you brung.
Well, and then it becomes prototypes rather than GTs, and I don't have an issue with that. I just want to make one thing clear.
Or, John, we get into balance of performance, which is not where people apparently want to be.
No, it's not where the manufacturers want to be, interestingly enough, because clearly they still want a GT2 style, GTE, call it what you will, production-based formula. However, I want to make one thing clear here. When I'm talking about the regulations, I am not talking about Aston Martin getting a 50 kilogram weight brake and a different fuel tank and bits and pieces like that in terms of balancing the performance. I am talking about cars like the BMW Z4 that does not have an engine that goes with that car. I'm not sure that it even has an engine that isn't a purpose-built race engine, because I'm not sure that there's a BMW 90-degree V8 in the road car range. This is the engine out of the GT3 car. It has a longer gap between the wheels, both across the car and along the car, so both track and wheelbase have been increased substantially from the standard Z4. Now, track is allowed in GTE regulations, but it's already over the amount that you're allowed to extend it. Length is not allowed under GTE regulations, and I believe that is one of the sticking points with the ACO, that they're telling BMW that it's got to go back to the same wheelbase as the standard car. Now, how easy or difficult that's going to be when they've got a car that's already longer than that. So we're not talking about fiddling around with balance of performance within the category, although I've got a comment to make about that in a moment or two as well, and I'm going to start quoting regulations, which I know will annoy some people. But what we're talking about here is wholesale changes from the production-based category. Now, it just so happened that I was watching the 1998 Le Mans race, for reasons that I won't go into right now, which reminded me, of course, that GT cars then, in fact, from the mid-1990s, when indeed McLaren won it as a GT car in 1995, didn't they, overall, those cars were running for outright victory, Graham, against sports prototypes, against what we would now call LMP cars. Now, Porsche, of course, with the 911 GT1, particularly the Evo, completely burst out of that category and effectively built a prototype that was clad in something that looked vaguely like a Porsche 911. Now, if that's the way we're going with these regulations, then why not just say so? And why not just say, fine, that's how we work, and that's what we're working towards, that's what the new regs will be in 2016. But until then, we've got a set of technical regulations that are that are very prescriptive, that says which cars you can use and what you can do to them. And whilst we have those regulations, and whilst people like me have got to make sense of them, then why aren't we sticking to them?
I tend to agree with you. Is the honest answer? And I think I tend to agree that it's one of two things or both. It's either a slightly preemptive strike, or it's keeping up the numbers and what's going to be a pretty difficult year. And pretty clearly, the carrot for the ALMS and beyond that for the future combined series is this is a de facto factory supported entry from BMW. Mm-hmm. And clearly, it's important to the championship to actually retain that very big name, you know, in that marquee. Am I comfortable with it? The purist in me says no. The pragmatist in me says, yeah, actually, I am. And I think the reason I am is it's not going to be at Le Mans. It's not going to be on that global arena. And they're going to have to make their peace with the other competitors in its chosen arena, which is the American Le Mans Series. And my guess will be that what you're looking at with the BMW Z4 GTE is the future of GT racing, which is something that is broadly based upon the GT3 car, but will in the future probably have bespoke electronics, bespoke aero for a GT3/E class, which will be the factory supported class in the future. So I think look at it, watch it, listen to it, because it sounds fantastic, because I think what we're looking at there, John, is the future GT racing.
Yeah, well, you might be right. This is not the first time the BMW have tried this, of course. They did it before with the V8 engine, the original
Absolutely.
V8 engine M3, and they were told very strongly to go away and think about it because the car wasn't a road car. I'm told as well that the Z4 has a transaxle, which it doesn't have in real life as well. That was the same problem that I had with the Jaguar, but that car wasn't as competitive and it was never going to be, so really it didn't make a lot of difference.
I like the word as competitive. It wasn't competitive, full stop.
Yeah, okay. What I would say, and I'm indebted to Kiana for this, on the Midweek Motorsport Listeners Collective, in one of the posts on there, which is a very good discussion, and I'm taking a view across a number of different points of view that have been espoused on the collective on this. Just talking about balance of performance, we are now in 2013. As recently as 2009, the Le Mans GT2 regulations said this about balance of performance. And can I just remind everybody, at that time, what were we seeing about what needed changing with GT2?
Nothing.
Yeah, and what did we need to do with GT2?
Leave it alone.
Thank you. And this is what it says. It is out of the question to make adjustments after or in accordance to each race. If adaptations are necessary, they will be imposed by the ACO, but preferably at the end of each race season. But should a model of the car show too high a performance, immediate measures could be taken by the ACO to reduce its performance for the following race. Now, what that says is, effectively, and again, this is the Kiana's reading this, and I completely agree, we preferably don't touch you, but if we have to, it is because you're too fast. So if you're running, for example, a Spyker C8, we won't really wish to help you because your car's horribly inferior compared to the rest. But don't worry, just wait a few years and even the worst of models gets easy BOP brakes, not after every race, well, at least after every two. And that is my issue with this. My issue that I am bored now, bored of GT manufacturers and teams, individual teams even, getting performance brakes for their model of the car against other people who are running the same model of the car, because the first thing they do when somebody beats them is put their hand up like as it's a North London junior school sports day and say, it's not fair, they're better than me, therefore you've got to give me a break. No, the answer is go and engineer your car better, run it better, or get better drivers. Not go whinging. If you want to go whinging, don't go racing. That's the symbol. It's a meritocracy. It's an engineering-based formula. And I want to see my cars winning classes, winning the GT category, that are better engineered, better driven, and better tactically run than everybody else, and not just getting performance breaks or having someone who's a better politician at the end of the day, or can shout loudest or put more money on the table, allegedly. Nick?
Isn't this another side of the same argument we've just had about British GT,
where it's exactly the same
other
argument.
Drivers ask for the drivers who are too quick to be removed, the teams use their clout as being manufacturers and threatening to take their ball away to get the other people slowed down. I mean, it happened at the back end of last year in the WEC when the Ferraris got that were punished for developing direct injection.
Mm-hmm. No, that was wrong.
And you have to admit, if that BMW is allowed into GTE, how effed off will Porsche be? Because they've needed a longer wheelbase for years and had to design a new car to get it.
And
not just stick a few inches in the existing chassis.
There's been a change. The Aston Martin has made some technical changes this year because the rules have been relaxed, and I understand that is for everyone in terms of what they can do with various parts of the engine and transmission. But yeah, bizarrely, and it's not often you're going to hear me say this about any form of motorsport, it does seem that Ferrari were penalised last year for having a better engineering solution, and this is not the first time that's happened in the American Le Mans Series 2. They had a couple of very clever things. They have saddle tanks on the car that allow their fuel to be spread over a better area and also lets them fill the car differently, and both BMW and Corvette complained about that to the point that they were allowed to have their fuel flow increased because it was felt that they were at a disadvantage because of an engineering solution that Ferrari had come up within the rules. It's wrong. And I'm sorry, I'm going to fall out with a load of people in various series, but it's wrong. You've got to make your mind up and stand up against these manufacturers and say, look, there's the rules. BMW, if you haven't got a car that you want to race within the rules, then don't come and race. It's two cars. Yes, it's another factory team, but BMW have said, categorically, there will be no customer Z4 GTEs. So why are we giving them these breaks? They're not racing in the WEC. They're not making the commitment to that. They're not racing at Le Mans. They're not making the commitment to that. They're racing in a national championship in the States, and the ACO have given them the breaks, not the American series. I don't understand that type of thinking by the ACO. I have no problem if the American Le Mans series want to do it because it's their series. But why are we compromising a rule book that needed nothing doing to it 3-4 years ago to basically kill the category and make it a complete irrelevance? And that is what's going to happen. That's what has happened, to be honest, because it's no longer a production class.
I think the answer, John, is you're approaching a very simple choice, aren't you, which is that you stick with the GTE rules and apply sensible waivers, being pragmatic about it. Sensible waivers, not coach and horses waivers. Or you say, that's not working for a majority of the potential entrance for this, therefore we're going to move to GT3, in which case it opens up a whole new can of beans, can of worms rather, in terms of the balance of performance thing being applied at Le Mans 24 hours in the WEC, for instance, in a very much more formal fashion. That's the choice. What they've actually done is neither of those two, but something rather in between. And I agree with you, it is confusing, it is difficult to actually explain. The one kind of counterpoint I'd give to you on this one, and it's, do you think the majority of the fans care?
Well, I'm looking at the Midweek Motorsport Listeners Collective, and they they may not be the majority of fans, but there's a clear majority saying, you know, similar things to what we are now. And I think the biggest thing is, and I'm going to hold the American Le Mans series and IMSA up as a shining light here. When IMSA do performance changes, balance of performance changes or waivers, they are printed on the website. And you can go and have a look at them. If you go to imsaracing.net, you can have a look at them. They're there from last year, and it's one of the things that I do before every race, so that I know whose wings allowed to be moved and who's got an extra size fuel tank and who's got half a centimetre more on the restrictor. And being an old traditionalist, I might not like that, but I understand why it's necessary, and I completely have no problem with it when we know what I don't like. And in some ways, the manufacturers are making a rod for their own backs here, gents, because the PR value that Nick was talking about earlier on about doing anything in motor racing is completely devalued if somebody says, hang on a minute, how come your Ferrari, which was so good last year, is now rubbish this year because nothing else seems to have changed? You've got to beat, you're up against this little BMW Z4, which is now tonking everybody in its first season. I'm predicting that this might happen. And you say, yes, but our car's closer to the rules. So are you saying they're cheating? Well, no, we're not saying they're cheating because they've been allowed to do it by the series. So what have they got that you don't have? We don't know. And not even the manufacturers know what the other manufacturers' waivers are.
That's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous, and it can't be allowed to happen. I am completely over GT racing now. This is really putting me off it to the point I've got to try and explain why this week there's such a difference between one car to the other. Either open it up and make it a free for all, and let's do the GT racing thing where everybody's got a balance of performance every week. But that's not motor racing; that's pure entertainment. We're on the WWF on wheels at that point, so don't let those cars go to Le Mans. I understand there's a balance of performance in everything nowadays to try and keep everybody happy, but it's got to be done on a technical basis and not just sticking a finger in the air or waiting to see who shouts loudest. I'm putting the soapbox to one side now.
Because you were very much on it there. It was high up, a double soap, I think, there.
A number of people... GM Graham says, what percentage of the field need to be awarded waivers before the rule book itself is waived? Don't get me wrong, I love the variety and want all of these cars in. So I'm going to take a different tack on the prevailing wisdom in the collective and state unequivocally the ACA rule book for GTs is wrong and should be seriously... be rewritten. A 5.5 limit, why? What's the purpose? 5.5 litres is the mean displacement for the road cars on which the race versions are based. Why would you have a displacement lower than most of the cars competing? Why, when the rules governing turbo engines allow as much air as a 6.6 litre normally aspirated could gulp? It's incumbent on the ABO to write relevant rules for the vehicles that they intend to be racing, and not incumbent on the auto manufacturers to build cars to the whims of the organisers. I don't disagree with that, GMG, at all. But once you've written the rules, you've got to stick with them. And the problem is, if you are saying it's got to be a production-based class, and the cars have got to be based on production, current production models, then that's what it's got to be. Otherwise, somebody just goes and... Well, you know, and we get the ridiculous situation where Ginetta can't race anywhere because they can't get homologated. Mm. Are they any less or more of a road car than this Z4?
Well, it's more of a road car because you can actually buy the things and stick them on the road.
Mm, interesting that, isn't it? It's going back to the same argument that we had in GTs when the Saline S7 was being criticised by all kinds of people, and in fact it was closer, much, much closer to the road car than the Corvettes that it was racing, because it shared things like body panels and engines, which the Corvette didn't.
But then that comes down to the fact that it's that argument again against the small manufacturer against the volume manufacturer. I mean, you think of the, you know, if you base a car on a Corvette, they're selling thousands of those. You base a car on a 911, they're selling thousands of those. You base a car on a Ginetta, they're only selling a handful. They are road cars, because the road cars therefore can be engineered much more like race cars, say race joint everything to begin with, because of the fact they are, you know, having limited numbers to go with.
Yes, which is why the GTE regulations allow you to change a lot of that thing and multi-link the rear end like Aston Martin have done this year on their car, etc., etc. Yeah. writing rules isn't rocket science.
It's worse.
You've got to stop trying to please everybody. There's got to be a line in the sand, and the line in the sand has got to be then respected by everybody.
But is this sudden bendiness we're seeing from the ACO anything to do with the absolute surge and almost domination of the GT world of GT3?
Funny you should say that. I wonder if that is indeed true. Are they trying to reinvent GT3 that isn't GT3 so that SRO can't shout at them?
They're trying to get more cars in there, and they're trying to appeal to more manufacturers, and they're saying, okay, we know a GTE car costs a lot of money to make, but you're already making a GT3. You only need to do these three or four things to GT3, and we'll call it a GTE.
Couple more before we move on with Graham Goodwin from DailySportsCar.com. Michael McLaren says, confused I am. Are sports car series in general forgetting what makes them relevant to the fans, and the reason sports cars are more widely subscribed to by fans over spec formulae? Who's advising these guys? KSN, why can't to play and has to play manufacturer politics to get their way so that team RLL can run the Z4 type GT3 in ALMS?
That's an easy one to answer. That's money.
ALMS can do whatever they want because it doesn't affect anything else. BMW aren't coming to play in the WEC or at Le Mans, so I don't see why the rules need to be changed for them. That's another thing, I just don't understand that. At least Viper have brought their cars to Le Mans and Corvette into Le Mans. But you know, this is an America only manufacturer based only. It's not helping out any privateers. When was the last time a specialist manufacturer won against the big teams? That would be Panos, says Matt Ohm. Reviper Jag reminds us that GTE GT2 allowed up to 8 litre engines for a decade, and 5.5 litre was a recent change when Stefan Rattel launched the GT1 class. That's very true. Absolutely. It's racing and should be about stimulating technological development, says Dave Osborne on the Twitter. Ferrari and McLaren by default have performance advantage due to road models. Unrealistic for everybody to build such supercars. Not sure I agree with that, to be honest, Jag, but okay. An extended wheelbase Z4 makes a mockery of the rules. Might as well call it the GT1 and put long tails on them as well. And then Nick can get excited about his McLaren, his Maserati MC12, of course, which was
Are we talking about the new GT3? Talk about GT3 cars, it's about the Maserati. So I'll start watching GT3 now.
Yes. A number of people saying that GT wants to be turned into NASCAR, it would seem. I'm not sure that that's true, and I'm not sure that this has been influenced directly by Daytona. Although, I do want to talk to Graham about speaking to Gabriel Kadringer about DPs going to Le Mans with P2s in the same category, and we'll do that in a little moment. You're listening to Midweek Motorsport. It's John Hindhoff and the rest of the team, but without Tim Gray this week because he is feeling distinctly under the weather. So coming up in the next hour, we'll have more of the same with Graham, plus some more F1 news, and Declan Brennan will have his ear on the oval. That's all to come in hour two of this week's Midweek Motorsport. But let's stay with GT racing for a little while and Graham Goodwin. Let's talk about some good news, some very good news. On Friday, there were 29 full season entries entered for the European Le Mans Series, a series that, dear listener, might remember, ground to a halt in the early part of last season with a 13 or 14 car grid at Donington Park, albeit with 11 fantastically competitive P2 entries, but nothing else to support it. It was the end for the ELMS. But Gerard Navarre, the man behind the FIA WEC, said it didn't need reinventing, it just needed reinvigorating. And my goodness me, Mr. Goodwin, hasn't that been done? More cars than were entered this time last year for what has been looked at as a lame duck series. Many, if not all, of the same teams coming back and being prepared to stake their reputations, their finance and their confidence, put their confidence behind Gerard Navarre and his team. I am absolutely amazed by what we've seen in that grid that was released last Friday.
I'm not. I'd say that immediately. Remains to be seen whether or not we do see 29 actually on the grid, but I'd agree with you. It's a fantastic job in a very short period of time to turn that around. But it does beg one question, which is, if you can do that in that short time, why wasn't it done last year? Because, let's face it, we're not particularly looking here at a vast amount of new teams, new cars coming to the series. We're looking at much the same people reshuffling themselves around some of the other series. But it is a very, very good job by the new ELMS team. I expect we are going to see it reinvigorating. I think we're going to... It's going to have a bit of a rocky road on the way. There's still those people in the background that are unconvinced so far about the three-hour formats, are concerned about the fact that it is now basically a support race on someone else's package at most, if not all, of the events in the year. So there's questions still to be answered, and there's still seats to be filled. There's lots of TBAs, as we said last week, show John, in LMP2. So we'll wait and see, but... let's put it this way, we are in the habit, aren't we, of giving people the benefit of the doubt. I've got pretty few doubts here. This is going to be a massive step forward from where we were at Donington Park.
What's amazed me more than anything else is, you know, we've said, haven't we, and we've talked about LMP2 already and the potential for multiple entries in the ELMS this year, and let's hope that does happen, because frankly the series needs it, let's be honest, and certainly going forward into 14. If there's going to be any sensible discussion about parity between P2 and DPs, they need to have some cars running this year. Otherwise, why would anybody bother even trying to make the balance of performance? But I am very impressed that those guys have come back to race again in a championship that, let's be honest, was tainted last year. You might say, I suppose, that where else would they go and race? But I don't get from... a few tweets, a few emails and a couple of phone calls that is how these teams are seeing it. They genuinely want the European version of ACO racing, another regional version, like the American series is a regional version rather than you could call it a national series, the American, but it covers such a large geographic area, it's much more realistic to call it a regional series. And it's important for the ACO, is it not, to get these series on a firm footing in all of the ACO classes to provide the next set of WEC runners for people who want to step up?
It's absolutely vital, and I think they recognise that. That's why, you know, we had Pierre Fillon was at Donington Park last year and was not a very happy man with what he found there, and has been very firmly linked with the push to get teams into the ELMS. It's very good indeed to see. You quite rightly said, John, that there's the majority of the teams that contested LMP2 last year are back this year, but there's three new teams in that number, and that's a very good thing to see. That's something we really need to see. In 2013 we've got DKR Engineering there with Alana Judd, Miranda Racing with Natasha Gashnang, who listeners will remember Natasha from the FIGT 1 Championship with the all-girl 4GT effort, and Oryx Competition, which is the XRML HPD, Dean Sterling on board there. But perhaps the most interesting one of all, in terms of, we talked, didn't we, about Nissan, the PR value, actually came from the Daily Telegraph, the Daily Mail this morning. It's in the mail, it must be true. And that's Jota Sport and one of their partners, Simon Dolan, a gentleman driver of no little speed, being tipped, I hear, as the potential new addition to the Dragon's Den panel.
Yep.
So that's great news for Simon, but that's very good news indeed for the ELMS, because we've seen, haven't we, the kind of public profile that those ladies and gentlemen have got in previous years. And knowing Simon reasonably well from the paddocks around the world, he will not be backwards in coming forwards in offering his opinion. And my guess is we've got a racing personality in the making there.
Which would be very interesting indeed. Hopefully we might get a bit of motor racing on Dragon's Den then. Only thing I know that's any good about that show is the music that they use, which is the Romeo and Juliet theme from Prokofiev, which of course, as everybody knows, is what the North East best football team runs out to.
We've had Newcastle.
It's gone quiet.
Nick seems to have a problem with his brain.
Breathing.
My back.
We've had Rebellion announce their drivers, Graham. We knew who they were going to be, but now we know what they're going to be doing.
Yeah, and the good news for lovers of ex-Formula 1 drivers in America is that Nick Heidfeld will be aboard that car for the full ALMS season with Neil Yarny. And it might well be a last opportunity this year to see Neil in a Lola Toyota, because I'm hearing he's bound for a factory contract next year. And that will be a super quick combination through the LMS season. It'll certainly give the Dyson boys and the Muscle Milk guys something to think about. And all of a sudden, it's game on an LMP1 as well in the LMS, isn't it?
Yeah. I think it's going to be very, very interesting how that turns out. An interesting use of the drivers. And who was the one that wasn't there last year? Who I saw? Oh, it's Frankie Cheng, isn't it? Is in the team as well. And
he was there, just for one race.
He only did one race with them last year. Yeah, I think he did all right, and I think that's a smart move by Bart. I did have a question actually, Graham, and I answered it, and then I sort of doubted myself.
No,
Bart did say that they'd looked at, but decided not to go down the road of the bolt-on flybrid flywheel system for that car, didn't they?
He did, yes.
Right, okay.
I think they're going down the road of proven speed and reliability rather than the potential, and absolutely no slight intended on anybody here, the potential for failure and weight penalty, if you see what I mean. From his point of view, he has, in terms of the competition he knows all about, he has a package that works. Why wouldn't you stick with it? There's not been a huge step forward for either the other two contenders in the ALMS, or indeed for the contender we've got in the WEC, because it's the well-known Lola Mazda combination in ALMS with Dyson. It is the upgraded Acura Honda ARX 03C now for Straka in WEC and for Muscle Milk in the ALMS. That's the bigger change, if you like, between the two. But they, I think, feel that they've got the measure of that, and I think you're going to see some very close racing between those three.
Grand Am ALMS Joint Technical Committee. Not surprised to see Scott Elkins from the ALMS and Grand Am Managing Director of Competition Richard Buck on there. Gabriel Kadringer also taking a very important role. You had a chance to catch up with him at Sebring, and some of his comments were very interesting indeed, particularly about the numbers that they've been looking at, almost identical to our very complicated workings out on the Midweek Motorsport Listeners Collective, I should mention. And thanks again to everybody who did those big spreadsheets to work out what the average lap time differences were over a number of cars, over a number of laps, and not just the pole position times. But 6 and 7 seconds is roundly the right sort of number in favour of the P2 cars on anything that's longer than a couple of miles of racetrack. But it was his comments, Graham, about DPs at Le Mans that I think will catch most people's attention, because not only did he not rule it out, he suggested that there might be an opportunity for a combined, shall we say, balance of performance hampered P2 and combined DP class at Le Mans.
Well, call it what it, I think if we call it the IMSA class until we know different, I think that's about right. I mean, what Gabriel was saying was, rather than actually keeping DP static and moving the LMP2s down to that level of performance or vice versa, is that actually they'll take the pragmatic view that you need to move both close together, because the numbers are huge in terms of the changes you'd need to make in aero efficiency. It's 75% improvement in one direction and 56% downgrade in the other. So what he was talking about was the potential for reducing the aero efficiency of the LMP2s marginally, perhaps by blocking off part of the diffuser and changing front aero to balance, and giving the DPs more of a diffuser at the rear, balancing at the front and a new rear wing, and actually matching them up there. I think there are two interesting things that came out of it, John. One is that he believes that all the changes to P2 have to be reversible, which therefore would give you the choice, wouldn't it? Either race as an IMSA P2, and therefore be slower than the regular P2s, or put the error back and race, with the teams from around the globe, from the WEC, the LMS, and Asia. But I think that the drums are beating ever more strongly now that we're likely to see some kind of IMSA class, perhaps as early as 2014, but more likely, I think, 2015, once they've proven the concept. That, I think, is a good thing. I see no reason why we shouldn't have it before. We had it before, with an IMSA standalone class, and there's no reason why we shouldn't have that again. The other thing he said that was interesting, though, was no decision yet on tyres.
And the tyres.
The combined class and the tyres.
Did you actually say to him, Gabriel, and the tyres?
I did, actually. Cheekily. And my guess would be, bearing in mind they are not confirming one way or the other at the moment, my guess would be that it's edging ever closer to a spec tyre across the unified class. Because whilst you can measure standalone the improvements or the step back you take on aero efficiency, clearly what you're looking for is something that gives you a level playing field. I'm pretty certain you're going to be looking at this stage at a spec tyre in LMP2, and perhaps the one class in the combined series that may stay as an open formula for tyres would be GT.
Well, and BMW of course have had to pile back into Michelin for their American series, and indeed I'm hearing the GT3s will run on that, because Dunlop have pulled out of the American market. It's gone mad on the Midweek Motorsport Collective on the forum at RadioLeMans.com. If you're not following that, you're missing out on an important part of the front programme. I literally cannot go through all of them. I'll pick a few out, as I already have done. It's like the course notes on the Open University programmes. You really need to follow along with that. Or you can tweet at Specutainment or at RadioLeMans. Many of you have done that as well. I'm loving what all of you are seeing, and thank you for the I know that I say this all the time, but it bears repeating, we've got a lot of new listeners tonight, and thank you for joining us, or possibly found us from the weekend at Bathurst. You'll find that our chat boards and our collective, as they have named themselves, are a far more friendly bunch than many places on the internet, and whilst there's a very, very wide range of opinion and argument on there, it's all done in the best possible taste. and with
that's
respect.
That's your 70s British TV reference ticked off.
There, we
on
the
bingo
card.
the
beautifully named Kenny Everett creation that was Cupid Stunt, of course. Mm-hmm. For a moment there, I thought I'd got that the wrong way around. And you will find, as I say, that not only is there lots of different opinions there, but there's a lot of respect for everybody as well. And please join in. I think you'll enjoy it. One point that a number of people have been making, Graham, is that whilst they all accept, or that are listening to the show tonight, that they are not your average punter, they are motorsport fans and they are GT racing fans, and a number of them have pointed out that they do care about this, and what's more, the more open regulations of GT3 doesn't guarantee big crowds.
Absolutely doesn't. I think a lot of it is about promotion of those events. It's about whether or not you regard the championships as being, if you like, a spectator event or as a competitor-led event, and in part that's because the organisation that arranges many of those events do not regard themselves necessarily as event promoters, with one or two shining examples to the contrary. But, it is exciting racing. They are fantastic cars. They look great. They sound fantastic. And with all of that, we need clarity. It's a bit like, John, I can recall, us having those discussions about getting clarity about the future in the United States as quickly as possible. Now you've opened Pandora's box as regulators to say that there's going to be a change in GT regulations. They need to make that decision quickly. It's the moment there's a vacuum. People are beginning to fill that vacuum by asking for more and more, and they're getting it. We have the situation where I'm certain that the decision by McLaren as to whether or not they come forward with the new product has been delayed, awaiting that decision. I doubt they're the only ones. And, you know, I think that's the point. You've got things like the Blancpain Endurance Series, which very clearly is all about the competitors. The crowd numbers at the Blancpain races, you know, don't flatter the racing. The racing's great, but it's not really a promoted event. You know, you barely know at some of those tracks that the event is actually on, and that's a shame. Perhaps there's an opportunity there for somebody to step in and, you know, play assist there. Moving forward, it needs to take that leap if actually you're going to grab the imagination of the public and the numbers it's going to require to take that next step forward. It can be done. We've seen it with what's up the Nürburgring, again back to Dubai, again what you saw at Bathurst, and indeed the Spa 24 Hours, but it doesn't happen week in, week out throughout the series.
Graham, a couple of quick snippets before we let you go. KCMG, you've got the Morgan Nissan, which is Asian Le Mans, and the big one, Le Mans 24 Hours.
First of the confirmed entries for the Asian Le Mans series, and I think the first Asian entered LMP2 at the Le Mans 24 Hours. I think that's right. I don't think we've had one before. Very good news. I don't think it's going to be the last car we see joining the LMP ranks in the Asian Le Mans series. At least I sincerely hope not. Certainly not what my information is telling me. Good news. Bit of growth in a new market. We've had a few false starts in Asia for ACO Wheels Racing. Let's hope this time they've got the formula right.
Finally, if you can't go to Sebring, I'm reading on dailysportscar.com, Sebring will be coming to Derby on the weekend of St Patrick's Day.
It's all down to that Dunk fellow, isn't it? That Paul Dunk fellow. You know, he may be nothing much more to Ready Le Mans than a glorified tea boy, but... In kind of sports car racing terms, the man's a god. What can I say? I know last year, when I was out in Sebring, my deputy editor was down at the showroom in Derby. Paul Dunk, of course, senior salesman down at Aston Martin there. And they put up a fantastic event, barbecue, big screen, a link to you guys actually doing the commentary, and a good time was had by all. I'm sure, John, Paul won't mind you guys taking the same text there if you've not already got it on your website, but he's looking for a bit of a crowd in Derby with a few interesting cars at the car park as well, and get a bit of Sebring atmosphere up and running and have some fun.
Big screen, big sound system, something tasty from Aston Martin Racing, and some food as well. If you want some more information, you can Skype at Dunkie, D-U-N-K-I-E 5150, or just check on the Midweek Motorsport Listeners Collective.
That's Twitter, not Skype.
Twitter at Dunkie5150, and that's D-U-N-K-I-E. Graham, thank you very much indeed. It's a very exciting time for sports cars. I love having you on here and talking about it, and I'm sure that there'll be even more news this time next week. I've just had James Warnett from the British GT wanting to get on tonight, so if he sends me his Skype details, we will. If he can't do that this evening, don't worry, we'll have him on next week for a right of reply. Don't think we're criticising any of the decisions that have been made by British GT, but it's quite right that he wants to come on and have a word about it, and we'll let him on and to do that and maybe answer some of your questions about it as well. But for the moment, Graham, thanks very much indeed, mate.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers. Have a good one. That's Graham Goodwin, dailysportscar.com. And if you don't know what dailysportscar.com is, make sure you find out soon and start reading on there. More and more of the content is free to view, but there's a very small and very good value of subscription to that for the full year for all sorts of sports car racing. We'll have Ear on the Oval in a little while, but let's take a little bit more of this.
Every week, we bring you all the motorsport news.
Midweek Motorsport.
Midweek Motorsport. At RadioLeMond.com.
Nick Damon is with us.
I am.
He's been contributing there. However, he's here to talk a bit of Formula One.
And having done one Formula One story, I've already had my knuckles wrapped for actually getting something wrong, though I haven't actually got it wrong.
Really? Okay, what were you wrapped for, first of all?
Rethmo Racer pointed out, and much as your surprise face you had on, that teams do pay for tyres.
Right, okay.
But let me finish. There is a flat fee between 2.5 and 4.5 million euros, which basically means it's a number that Pirelli make up. They're allowed to charge between that amount in the regulations. However, teams do not necessarily pay the full sum, but pay in other ways, like with sponsor displays and their cars and their drivers. So if you think 2.5 million euros, now obviously if you're driving a Marussi around, that's the advertising for the whole side of the car, but one Pirelli sticker on a Ferrari will cost you more than 2.5 million in the open market.
Yes, okay.
And so there's a lot of reverse work, so I think it's fair to say that most of the teams would pay very little to nothing. Some of the smaller teams might get who could least afford it, obviously, as the perversity of F1 as ever, may actually cough up some cash, but no one is paying the 4.5 million, and I would say no one's paying 2.5 million. They are probably paying perhaps they're only paying for the engineers and that sort of stuff, and then it is theoretically a paid system. However, practically, it probably isn't.
We went on the tyre story because, frankly, that is the big story in Formula One this week. There's a lot of, aren't the cars fantastic? So if I said to you, who said their cars made a big step forward this week, how many teams could you name that would have said that?
Ferrari.
Yeah.
Tick. Sauber.
Yeah.
Force India.
Yeah. Force India progress clear, says Bianchi.
I don't. Toro Rosso would have said that because their car is a big step forward.
Jean-Eric Vergne says rubbish. Toro Rosso has made a step forward but insists it will take time for the STRA to show potential.
Nice bit of we're doing well, but let's temper that enthusiasm.
Absolutely.
I've not seen it said by, I think Mercedes, Niki Lauda said they've taken a big step forward, but the rest of the Mercedes people haven't.
Let's stick with Mercedes because there's been a bit of argy-bargy. What's Ross Brawn said about that this week?
Oh, it's all fine. It's a new management settling down. It's fine. It's fine. Now, interestingly, when I got home, I say early, at a reasonable hour on Friday from work, and I ended up sitting down and actually watching Sky Sports F1. There's a story about Sky Sports F1, actually, for the UK listeners and viewers I need to tell you about, which I noticed this week. And they were showing their daily roundups of testing, which is good, which is nice. But interestingly, the only technical man that Mercedes put up was Toto Wolff.
Really?
So he did all the stand-ups. All the ones I saw, and I saw about six, as well as the drivers. This is a bit parochial, but it is very Formula One. How much did Sky Sports F1 HD cost last year?
Oh.
To a Sky Sports subscriber?
Oh, nothing.
Nothing. If you but you had to buy the
sports package,
the HD package.
The HD package, okay.
Nope. This year, for 6 months, it's £5.25, and for after that, it goes up £10 a month. Unless you've got the sports package.
Right, okay.
So a lot of people I knew took the HD package, because it's free, because the sports package obviously is very expensive. It's all football, which is fair enough if you like football. They have to pay their £1.6 billion 3-year contract that's coming up. So, interestingly,
but this harks back to a story we had last week
about
our Fox trying to take over.
Yeah, and about Sky Italia improving what they're doing, and about Premier improving what they're doing, about the whole thing, the source of income. So Sky now will be, if you've got the Sky Sports package, it doesn't matter, but if you're getting it for free, just in the back of HD, you are going to have to subscribe.
But there is a Sky F1 non-HD channel, you know that, don't you?
Yeah, but you have to have both, so you have to pay for both of them now.
Okay,
it's about 480 something, isn't it?
Yes.
But that's you only get that if you have the sports package and don't have HD.
Okay. The other big news then. Who has said of whom they are selfish this week?
Oh, this is ridiculous. David Coulthard, who's had a bad week, but this happened before his bad week, in fairness. So
For those that don't know, David's sister Lindsay, who was actually a decent carter in her day, and I commentated on her karting when David, who was I think probably doing 3000 or Formula 3 at the time,
about 6 years younger than him.
Yeah, he was spannering for her on a British national karting. She died rather suddenly at the weekend, I think. He was actually on a live British television programme at the time. He was doing Saturday Kitchen with James
Martin,
the very motorsport-centric chef, TV chef. So he hasn't had a good week, but in fairness, so I'm not criticising, I'm kicking him while he's down, but he did say this before all that broke.
He claimed that people who criticise the the Melbourne Grand Prix because it loses money for the state are selfish.
Bad choice of words.
Which is an odd choice of words. I mean, if he said that he felt they were not looking at the wider picture, weren't taking into account the greater good for the Australia and the state of Victoria, possibly. But I don't quite see how having concern that the bottom line is losing money, and then what you have to do after that is factor back in all the various knock-on effects of hotel rooms, everything else. I mean, that's fine. You say they don't understand how it works. I don't see how they're being selfish. He's managed to get himself reported in all the papers and made himself look rather silly, which is surprising, because he's actually had a very solid 2 or 3 years since he's retired of actually saying sensible stuff, which, having known him when he was younger, surprises me.
Yeah, he's said a few stupid things in recent years. He wasn't very good when Dan Weldon was killed, unfortunately, as well. But anyway, so that was an interesting one. I will accept, by the way, anybody who says there's different ways of counting how much money goes into an area in terms of inward investment.
I think
selfish was an interesting choice.
The only figure that is indisputable is the figure that they produce for their loss, because they've calculated what they've made back and what it's cost them, and they lose, I think, 18 million Australian, I think they lose, or did lose last year.
It's a bit more than that, but
I think it's 18, I think it was, as you announced the figure.
Does that take into consideration the inward investment? And I was told at the weekend that it did. But then I said, does it take into account the effectively 4 hours of free advertising
that's a really good point, John, because if you think about it, Australia is, you know, a Western style democracy, but of the various flyaway races, most of them are completely subsidising the race to a ridiculous amount just to get that kudos of, you know, 3.5 hours of live TV worldwide, where everyone goes, we're in China, we're in Bahrain, we're in Abu Dhabi, we're in wherever it may be, because there's no other reason for doing it. It's entirely about the halo effect of having a Grand Prix. And they are prepared to pay beyond handsomely for it, and that has obviously the knock-on effect. It's squeezed out the traditional venues in Europe, and good or bad thing discuss, I'm pretty certain the collective would say bad thing, but, you know, as a global sport that travels as a circus, you know, does it really matter is the question. I think, you know, personally, my opinion is well known here. I think the number of flyaways is ridiculous, and I think if we're having 20 races, there should be there to try and have 12 in the European region, which is still the hub where everyone comes from, and 8 flyaways. But perhaps I'm being parochial. European parochial.
One more bit of parochial F1 news. We're waiting for the BBC radio team to be finalised for this year. We know that there's a couple of changes coming. Yes.
It's still Jenny, isn't it?
I think it's still Jenny and James Allen, but I think it's the summariser that's going to change.
All right, because it was Jaime Agaswari last year, wasn't it?
It's going to be, I don't know who it's going to be, but we're waiting.
Well, there is one thing we're still waiting for. There's one thing in F1 we're really still waiting for.
Fifi's the driver.
I know.
Still waiting.
How short of money are they?
Well, apparently they've taken a few people, but Lewis Hamilton, Jenson Button and Fernando Alonso said, no, you can't have them, they're too fast.
Ah, I see. Yeah, the other team said, no, I'm sorry, that's not going to happen, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, obviously, they've been coming out of the stream of reasons why they shouldn't have Jules Bianchi and then tested him for 2 days. And I believe that stream of reasons is exactly equal to the amount the check's light. And when the check from Jules becomes the correct amount, that'll mysteriously sort itself out. Or more likely, when they get the contract for Ferrari engines next year for 2014, that might help as well.
All the news from across the pond. If it happens over there, hear about it here.
Midweek Motorsport.
Midweek Motorsport.
And hopefully I've got all the bits of string pointing in the right direction and the tin can has been passed over the top of the snowdrift to Declan Brennan. And we can say hello to our North American correspondent. Hello, Declan.
Hello.
Oh, you're very clear. It's like you're sitting here. You aren't sitting
here.
Well,
if you just look behind you.
How are you, mate? And how's the weather?
It's lovely. It's gorgeous today. It's sun's out helping to melt the snow, and we had a massive... I made a schoolboy error earlier just because it was yellow. I thought it was a JCB, but it was the cheek of it. It was a John Deere painted the wrong colours.
No, hang on a minute. That's inherently wrong.
I know. How could you have a yellow green John Deere? I think that's called passing off in commercial law. A giant yellow thing that wasn't a JCB. Well, it was in fact a John Deere. Cleaning up vast quantities of tonnage of snow from our road, which is great because now we discovered three dead postmen and two dogs.
A bit morbid.
So, nothing that you can sell, sadly.
Well, I'm sure there's a few checks in the post bag, but I haven't seen them open yet.
Dex, just before we fire off with the American news, and we have got a bit of IndyCar, etc., to talk about as the seasons begin to get a little bit closer. You were listening earlier on to the discussion about GT regulations, and I know you were at the Rolex 24 at Daytona for us, and there's a real opportunity, isn't there, for sports car and indeed GT racing generally in the US at the moment, with IndyCar clearly on the decline, and us having this debate as... and our listeners having this debate, and our listeners being the cognoscenti of sports car racing, it doesn't help the casual fan, does it?
No, and I wanted to say, when I say what I'm about to say next, this is not in any way an insult to our listeners. In fact, it's not an insult at all. It's the opposite. But in some respects, when it comes to things like these GT decisions, particularly what you talked about, I think we can't simply listen to the core fan that we have as our listener, because they are the most educated, the most forensic when it comes to drilling down into what the rules are about and how it affects each car. And it's incredibly admirable and it's fantastic, but the entry level for fans, particularly if they want to grow the sport in the United States, as you said, with an opportunity, with a swinging door in effect with the decline of IndyCar and the merging of the two groups in IMSA and Grand Am, there's an opportunity to build something spectacular. And the Z4 GT3 in some respect is arguably the kind of poster child for that, because it's, I would suggest, it's partly the mixture of the two philosophies, the IMSA and the Grand Am philosophies, that have led us to this car in this state joining at this time, if that makes any sense. And I'm all for it, because for me, I think the top class in GT, no matter what it's called, if it's GT2 or GTE or GT simply, has to be evocative and loud and sexy and have a general affiliation with the cars that you can see on the road, but not exactly the same. And I think that's going to attract fans, and fans are going to love it. But I think we have to strike a balance where we then don't alienate the forensic level of fans, which we have, which listen to this show every week, who love the idea of these strict rules and these very, you know, they're walking a fine line. And what's interesting is there's the two different philosophies within IMSA and the ALMS. We'll see this come together more now that they've announced this group, because we've talked about this before. The Grand Am are all for bringing in manufacturers and making them as comfortable as possible and changing rules for them. And we've seen that across their prototype classes. And that doesn't happen, obviously, to the same extent in the American Le Mans Series, but it does happen. John, I can recite the story of walking through the paddock 2 years ago at Lime Rock, and I was with my father-in-law, and we got Doug Fien gave us a fantastic tour of the Corvette, and as he was giving us the tour, was basically laying into BMW for having waiver after waiver. Then I went over to speak to Bill Cobb at BMW and talk to Tommy, and I got laid into about, because I'd just been to see Corvette, about how illegal their car was. So this isn't anything new.
No, it isn't.
But it becomes the philosophical approach to how they bring this together. And the interesting thing is, I think there are marketing forces at work here within the... I think Corvette, for example, will love this, because Corvette will simply adhere to the rules as much as they can, and then bring out ads saying, you know what, this is really our road car that we've had to dumb down, like they already do, you know, and theirs isn't their road car at all. You know, and that's the sort of... So there are all sorts of interesting sort of ways that this can be spun, but ultimately, there's a very fine balancing act between producing really evocative, fantastic sports car racing that that can embrace a larger audience, like we got at the Rolex 24, and what IMSA and the ACO and to some extent some of the and the SRO do as well. And it's, I think they have to find a balance. Nick talks about it all the time, the difference between entertainment racing and something that's adheres to the spirit of the sport.
Before I move on to the hardcore American news, and by the way, for the new listeners, and we have got lots of new listeners this week, and hello to all of you, get onto the Midweek Motorsport Listeners Collective over at RadioLeMond.com and tweet at Specutainment or at Radio Le Mans. Thanks for your support of the weekend for our sim raceway powered coverage from Bathurst. Question that I was asked at the weekend at Bathurst, and I didn't really know the answer to it, Dex, but I said I would put it to you when we had the show on Wednesday. No Abu Dhabi race for the V8 supercars this year, but Circuit of the Americas instead, as a leading, as a lead event, as the main event at the Circuit of the Americas. The two questions I was asked is, does anybody in America care, and will it draw a crowd?
It's a fantastic question, and I really don't know the answer.
And this was from Australian enthusiasts.
I will, if you'll allow me, give me basically 2 and a bit weeks. If come back to me the first week in March, and I promise you, we'll have an answer, because I will have spent time. I'll have spent 3 or 4 days in Austin, and I will be
obviously when there's no motorsport there at all.
Well, no, I'll be there for the Grand Am. I'll be there for the Grand Am with CJ Wilson Racing.
I'm not sure that's allowed, as our listener knows, that you only go into town as the... can you not go the days after the races or the day before?
That was the big stumbling block in my contract with CJ, and ultimately I had to... it was a waiver, effectively.
Are you going to balance your performance by not being very good on race days?
I will. No. Basically, the problem is all the other PR guys like Matt Cleary and Efren Olivares are going to put in protests that I'm too good, and they'll want performance balancing to make their press releases as good as mine.
It's not difficult, Declan. All they do is take away your hat and put you out in the sun.
new listeners, Declan is a very light-skinned Irishman, as you probably heard the Irishness from his voice, but you couldn't tell how light-skinned he is.
The thing is, I'm very interested. They're running, obviously. The fascinating thing about that's the whole story was it all came about in and around the time that Speed, for example, did the live Bathurst coverage the year before last, and it looked like there was a major, impetus for the growth of the series and interest in the United States. And then, of course, there was the change of team ownership or series ownership and international broadcasting rights change. And it's really the landscape for V8s has changed. So I'm obviously I'll get to the bottom of this when I get to the track, and I'll get a sense from locally of what sort of a level of excitement there is. There is going to be a really good support. There's a lot of support races on. There's a lot of racing that weekend. It's going to be a good event. Pirelli World Challenge is going, and there's a few other things. It's going to be a really good event.
Two big stories that stick out for me at the moment. We'll do NASCAR in a moment, although, of course, their season opener is much closer to the start of their season, but I want to start with IndyCar, actually, with the Izod IndyCar series, because there's all kinds of trouble brewing there. We're still waiting to find out who's going to be the man who, or the person who will replace Randy Barnard. It looked for a moment like it might have been Brian Barnhard, whose duties were somewhat extended, but that's clearly not the case, and so we're still waiting for a new CEO. Dish Network.
Oh, that could be him now, or it could be Dish Network.
Maybe they're offering you the job, mate. That's the other thing. So we can sort of put that one on the back burner for a little while. But there's this intriguing story.
My wife will never learn.
What day is it, Cara?
This is season 7 now.
eight.
It's season 8. Yes, season 8, and it's like in the contract.
How many times has this happened before, but we've never heard of it outside of the paddock? But Catherine Legg has decided to do something about it. This is an intriguing story where Catherine Legg introduces a sponsor to a team as part of her getting the drive. This is not a new story. Many drivers do it. And all of a sudden, her contract in the middle of January has been terminated. This is Dragon Racing. They've got Sebastian Saavedra in to partner Sebastian Bourdais, and Catherine is, on the face of it, you would say, not unreasonably, a bit teed off about it.
Well, in very, very simple terms, she signed a 2-year deal and they've let her go without telling her why. So,
and
she
they've
has
kept
a right
her
to know.
Sponsor, her sponsor, the sponsor that she took to
well,
the team.
Well, yeah, TrueCar, yeah. Interesting thing about TrueCar, John, they've put pretty much they're a startup with they
what
haven't
are the
got two a
decks?
TrueCar are a business that is basically about it's about making decisions on cars in the showroom. It's like a review. It's how would you put it? It's basically the interesting thing is it's basically a consumer site for buying new cars.
Okay.
And getting and dealership reviews and but the interesting thing is they did research that says that 55% of new car ownership decision or new car decisions are made by in couples are heavily influenced by the, or more heavily influenced by the wife by she who must be obeyed, so they decided to throw all of their sponsorship towards women in motorsport, and build this whole empowerment campaign around it. Now the red flags went up for me when I spoke 12 months ago to the guy who was running the program at the time about doing something with them with one of my other clients as a cooperative basis, but he immediately sent me through a sponsorship deck basically asking me to get involved with the program. And it dawned on me what they'd done was they'd taken a pretty big risk. They'd sponsored women in MX5 Cup, in the Pirelli World Challenge, in UF F2000, Indy Lights, Star Mazda, and IndyCar. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
The plan was
just for a startup company, at least, yes.
As a startup, yeah, this is a startup, and the plan was, as it turned out, when I got through his proposal, they were effectively doing almost what Nick has always explained about what Philip Morris do. They bought the car, and they were really out there to look for complementary automotive female aim products, effectively, or automotive products that they could put onto their TrueCar sponsorship and effectively underwrite. So they were underwriting it in the hopes they'd bring in other partners.
This was like Nigel Mansell in IndyCar with the wasn't it Target sponsorship that became.
Well, he was Kmart, but Target.
Yeah. Kmart with Gillette and Energizer batteries and basically all of their. It became, you know, if you give us some money for our IndyCar, you'll get the end aisle on Labor Day weekend kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. And they were basically using this whole female empowerment thing as a platform, but they had to obviously underwrite it and with a huge exposure. And the plan was clearly, and the interesting thing, and Catherine Legg in a very candid column with Marshall basically outlined that she said in the last paragraph, she said she was out selling. She was basically out selling sponsorship to underpin the TrueCar investment. So she was still out trying to find money in exactly the same way as I outlined as the guy I spoke to was. So it's
short of it is they've terminated her 2-year deal on the 18th of January. There doesn't seem to, although it's been according to one side, and we've only got one side of the story at the moment. The team, Dragon Racing, haven't said why they've terminated her contract, but they're keeping TrueCar as a sponsor for the Saavedra effort. Now, who runs Dragon Racing?
That's Jay Penske.
Would that be the same Penske who has a lot of car dealerships?
Well, his father has a lot. I don't know how many Jay has. Jay's in the communications business, but his father has a lot of car dealerships.
Okay.
And the plan was that part of this was the dealerships were going to get us aligned with the program. As part
so
of
basically,
the,
TrueCar is like a car clearinghouse. It's about getting a car for the best price you can online, etc. So, does this mean that the synergy, to use a horrible marketing term, that Catherine obviously spotted early on with her sponsor, has actually been her undoing?
Yes. Funnily enough, I will say, just literally, just in my inbox, Marshall Pruitt has just said to me that literally, and he's not even listening to us. He's working on Penske's response to Catherine Legg's piece right now, and will be up very shortly, which is very interesting. But you're absolutely right in what you said. And this is not new, John.
It's happened a million, like I said in the introduction, it's happened a million times before. What I'm shocked, in a good way shocked about, actually, is that Catherine's been prepared to stick her head above the parapet and, it would appear, instigate some kind of legal proceedings to find out if there's anything she can do about this. Because, unfortunately, dealings in motorsport aren't always above board. Now, whether this one is or it isn't, we don't know yet. But too often, it gets buried in the paddock and never gets out of it. And frankly, you and I both know, Dex, without naming any names, because we can't afford the litigation here on Midweek Motorsport, that there are people that do business in various motorsport paddocks around the world who are nothing short of crooks, to be honest. And they are allowed to come back time and time again after not making good on promises and folding businesses to stop paying them debts. They are allowed to come back because the industry continues to do business with them and keeps it quiet. And that is shame on the industry, frankly.
I completely agree.
Now, the rights and wrongs of this case we don't know yet, and I'm not siding with either, but I do think it's quite brave of Catherine to stick her head above the parapet.
It is, and I think she's probably annoyed, and I think I need to dig this up further, and I will find this out for the next show, but Sebastian Saavedra, who's got the drive, I will be almost certain is bringing some level of Colombian money, which backs up this whole idea that there's still a shortfall, financial shortfall, and TrueCar isn't necessarily in a position to fully pay for the two cars as they have done. So I'm going to get more information. I know, as he said, we'll get a lot more from based on Marshall literally working on a piece now. So watch out for Marshall's piece on Speed on this, and I'll probably have a little bit more about this next week. You've given me homework. It's two stories in a row now. You've given me homework for.
Before we move on.
Oh, IndyCar. We've got other IndyCar news, John, of course. They've just announced who the Carb Day Act is for this year at Indy. Poison.
Oh. See, now, I'll be honest with you, mate. When I saw this, I thought that was how they were going to guarantee a big crowd on Carb Day, because they were threatening to kill everybody who bought a ticket for the main race who didn't actually go to Carb Day.
The other big news is, Dex, that the biggest TV market for IndyCar has been decimated.
You've heard this, have you?
I haven't heard this. What's that?
TV in the UK for IndyCar is probably one of, if not the biggest markets for it, and it's going to ESPN rather than Sky Sports this year.
Excellent. That means that only three of the four people will be able to see it now.
Oh, no, only one of the four people.
So I'm not familiar with how ESPN works, but I believe ESPN really hung its hat on its football soccer coverage that it had
lost, of course.
Yes.
And it is still an additional, just as Nick was talking about earlier on, about Sky Formula One becoming an additional premium unless you've got the sports package. Well, ESPN is an additional premium even if you've got the sports package.
I can only assume it's currently £10. It loses its football at the end of this football season in the UK. I can only assume they're going to have to reduce the price.
Yeah. That's a bit, that is again a bit UK centric, and we have got a global audience tonight, so I want to move on from that, but I just wondered if you'd known about that, Dex. I presume they're going to explain who Poison are to 95% of the crowd at Carb Day.
Believe me, once you've got being the Carb Day, 95% of the people will know exactly who Poison is. That's part of the problem with IndyCar, and NASCAR has the same problem. It appeals to a very old demographic.
Let's move on. IndyCar, obviously targeting Jaguar and Bentley, and Rover 75 customers let's move on to NASCAR. The race for the Chaser Cup for the Quest for the Thing starts the American motor racing season off, of course.
With ARCA, John. ARCA, before, I know we've got other stuff to cover, but the qualifying rules are so complicated, we might have to, with the amount of time we have left, we might have to leave them out till next week. But I will just want to mention, Julian Juice is signed to run the ARCA race.
Which is fantastic. You
didn't mishear me. Julian Juice is running will be running at Daytona in the ARCA race. which is remarkable. And that literally did come from absolutely nowhere. But we have new qualifying rules for Indy, stock car racing. They are, oh boy, as I said, we've 7 minutes left, and I do think I'm about to turn into some sort of Open University lecturer at this point. But let's see if we can run through them. Basically, they're going to a 36-6-1 rule, which obviously is no longer any go or go homers. It basically means 36 cars qualify for every race.
Yeah.
The next six go to those not the highest six people in owner points not qualified, and the last spot is reserved for a previous series champion who doesn't fit the other criteria. So,
that's the catch-all, if you like.
Yeah.
The wild card, if you will. So, right, let me go through this again. Top 36 qualify on time.
Yes.
So you go out, you do your qualifying, and in time, from first down to 36th, there's 2 seconds or whatever there is between you, and you're in or you're not in, regardless of anything else. So even if you're a rookie and you're in 27th position and nobody's heard of you and you've got no history in the sport, you're in the race, correct?
Correct.
37, 38, 39, 40, 41, and 42 are for people who haven't qualified in that top 36 but have owner
points. The highest placed in owner points.
Right, who haven't qualified.
Yeah.
And the other one is a catch-all. Okay, that's fine. Is that a big change, Dex?
Not a super big. It's not a massive change. It does get interesting, though, for a number of drivers come to Gatorade Jewels,
right?
Because that is basically being used for the 500 with a one or two tiny little changes. Obviously, you're locking in the front row of the grid as you do, and then everybody else then qualify the next 15 in each Gatorade Jewel qualify, and then we have the same system. But because there are a number of drivers who are quite low, big drivers who had pretty low in owner points, and like in the 20s and 30s, mm-hmm. there are some big names that if they were to crash for whatever reason
and not set a time,
and not, well, crash in, don't forget, in the race.
Oh yes, yeah, sorry,
in the qualifying race, could find themselves on the outside looking in. There's the likes of Joey Logano, and there's one or two others who are a big. Even people like Kyle Busch could be in the situation. So it actually adds, finally, after several years of really being almost a foregone conclusion, it adds a little bit more intrigue to the Gatorade Jewels, and they'll be even more worth watching than normal. So, and I've done that in a very, very fast way. What I will try and do is I'll try and get a better idea for you who some of those drivers potentially are, and we'll do that. We'll talk about that at least before qualifying, because obviously we still have a couple of weeks to go before the race. So we'll go through obviously qualifying.
What it does mean that anybody who's changed teams, any big drivers who've changed teams to a team that doesn't have owner points could be in strife, doesn't it, of course?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Yes, okay.
Yes, 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 and yes.
A couple of points from our listeners. A number of people pointing out that the ESPN channels in the UK on Virgin Media and other cable operators are complimentary, and I don't mean they pop up and go, oh, you're looking nice today in that fleece thing. So perhaps an opportunity to pick up some different viewers, and for those channels to promote that a little bit more. Although someone else pointed out, the BBC do show indeed every race, not all of them live, but there's a minimum of 1 hour's worth of race highlights after every race. And frankly,
that's F1.
Of F1, yes, sorry, that was, we talked about F1 earlier on, going to Sky, and Sky being paid channel now. An hour's worth of F1, frankly, should be enough for most races, I would have thought.
Andy, I'll just quickly interrupt to bring you the update on who is in trouble potentially come out the Gatorade Jewels. And this comes from a terrific article explaining the whole thing on Auto Week, which I have to say was helped me enormously. Kyle Busch and Carl Edwards, cars were 13th and 16th in owner points. They have to be a little wary, because if they have an accident, they might not get in on a provisional.
Right.
And then further down, we've got the likes of Matt Kenseth. Don't forget, he's moved. He's gone to take the Joe Gibbs car, Joey Logano's car, and that's 18th in owner points. And Joey Logano, who's gone to Penske, is now in the 22-4. He's 21st in owner points. So there's four guys, pretty marquee names, who there is some chance that maybe one of those guys could miss the 500. Obviously, if Kyle Busch did, I'd laugh an awful lot for a long time.
I think a lot of people would, fit in.
Yes. And probably Carl Edwards as well, if the truth be known. But that's, I mean, in some ways, that's the way it should be. That race is so big. The same way we've had big names over the years, like Paul Tracy and people like that miss the Indy 500. Even going back to 1994, when Allanser Jr. and Emo and Penske failed to qualify. It enhances and helps the event if you have big marquee names who don't make it in. It makes it special.
This from Joe at Where Rabbit. Fantastic Twitter handle there. He said, when you were talking about big changes in qualifying, damn it, he says, I thought you were going to say drivers would have to turn both directions instead of just one. That is about your lot for tonight. No time for news in Spanish or indeed the pointless press release of the week, but they will be back next week when Tim will have recovered from the dreaded lurgy that he has at the moment. And I'd like to thank Graham Goodwin of dailysportscar.com, Declan Brennan, our US correspondent, and Nick Damon, our Formula One correspondent, who's been with me. The responsible adult, as ever, was Eve Hewitt, who also provided the menu this evening. It's been a very busy Midweek Motorsport tonight. Thanks to all of our new listeners for tuning in. If you want to find out more about the show, all of the archive is available. There's over 500 bits and pieces on iTunes and all of the archive at RadioLeMans.com. You can go as far back as the very first series, and indeed some people have. That's it. Be back next week, 8 o'clock UK GMT on Wednesday night. Until then, thanks for listening. And the llama is jet-lagged.
This program is a Radio Show Limited production. For more, go to www.radiolemans.com. Radio Show Limited. We talk to the world.